The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is August 8th, 2014, and we are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York. We're not the biggest, but we're the best. And our motto is, in case you don't know us, we don't try, we succeed. And today, we're going to talk about real hardcore power rack training. And we've got a first-time guest again on the show who I've been trying to track this guy down forever, but I've been a big fan of his since his days writing for Hard Gainer magazine. I've got probably just about anything he's ever put out, whether it's motivational-wise speaking to the Lost Secrets of Strength and Development. If anybody doesn't know what that book is, that's Dinosaur Training. So, without further ado, I want to welcome Brooks Kubik to Motivation and Muscle. Hello, Brooks.
Hello, Eric. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Hey, very well. Thank you.
Well, we're doing real good here because I'm very excited to have you on. Like I said in the intro, big fan. And your kind of knowledge is not only appreciated by me, but you know, I hold it very high within anything I do because you've been a very big influence on me in a lot of ways. So for anybody that doesn't know you, which I can't believe they don't, because you've been around for a while and you've put out incredible literature, and you know, I know you've been on other shows too. Why don't you give everybody a little bit of bio about yourself so we can, you know, we can introduce you to Motivation and Muscle.
Sure. Well, you know, I was thinking about what I would say by way of a bio, because I figured you'd probably ask a question like that. And I think what people need to focus on is, you know, let's go back 20, 25, 30 years in time. And let's look at the training world as it existed back then. And then, you know, I'll tell you a little bit about how I think I fit into that picture. But okay. Training world, I mean, there was a time that some of us, I'm 57, there are some of us, we can remember the coaches in high school didn't let you lift weights. The high school gyms didn't have barbells and dumbbells. They had universal gym machines. Then we had the Nautilus craze. Isolation machines, single exercise machines, you needed 12, 13, 14, 15 of them to get a complete total body workout. That was viewed as somehow better than weights, and basically it was supposedly safer than weights. If you were able to find a gym that actually had real weights, most people were doing bodybuilding or bodybuilding style workouts. You know, they were doing 5-6 day a week workouts. They were doing 2 or 3 hours a day, and it was all light weights, muscle pumping, a lot of upper body work. You know, you got to pump those buys, pump those tries, you know, do your pec squeezes, your pec pushes, all that type of stuff. That was the training world, and the training advice, there were virtually no books. Of course, there was, and some of the younger listeners won't believe this, there was no internet back then. But you know, there were no books really on the topic, very, very few. There were magazines, and they were what we call muscle magazines, what we now, many of us, refer to as muscle comics. But these were magazines that talked about the bodybuilding way of doing things, and they talked about the champions with a capital C. And the champions with a capital C were people who lived on Muscle Beach in California, supposedly, and did nothing, supposedly, but lift weights all day. And if they weren't lifting weights, they were lying in the sand to get their suntans down, and they spend a little bit of time surfing and chasing girls. And other than that, all they did was work out. At least that was the mythology, the fiction. We all grew up in that world, and that was the only training world out there. And there were very, very few people who were sort of voices in the wilderness, if you will, saying, that's crazy. That doesn't work. It's not real. It's a fiction. It's a fantasy that magazine ghostwriters have concocted, and they've been selling it to you for years, really for decades. And it's crazy. And the other thing is, training that way doesn't work. So, you know, there were a couple people, Perry Rader, the original founder and publisher of Iron Man magazine, which originated as a little mimeographed sheet of paper, not even a magazine, just a mimeographed sheet. He had this little magazine going, teeny tiny little thing for a long time, ran it for 50 years. And his big thing was short, very, very simple, very brief, basic workouts, focusing on the squat, particularly the 20-rep breathing squat. That was something that Perry Rader pushed in virtually every issue of Iron Man magazine for the 50 years that he was in charge of the magazine. One of his writers when I was growing up was a man named Bradley J. Steiner, originally from New York City, now out in Seattle, Washington. Steiner got into weight training because of an interest in martial arts, and he found out he wasn't very good at martial arts because he could only do something like 2 push-ups, if you can believe that. And he, you know, he learned how, he got bigger and stronger by good old-fashioned, what we now call old-school weight training, weightlifting. But very, very few people pushed that kind of thing. And most of what you got were the very long 6-day-a-week bodybuilding programs. A man named Stuart McRobert, when Perry Rader stopped publishing Iron Man, came out with a little magazine, very small little journal called Hard Gainer. And it kind of inherited, if you will, took the mantle from Perry Rader's Iron Man. And it started to push basic, simple compound training for, quote, the average man. Someone who might not ever be Mr. Olympia or look like Mr. Olympia, but wanted to get bigger and stronger. Mm-hmm. And I subscribed to the magazine. It kind of rekindled an interest in training for me when I was in my my mid to late 20s, thinking that I was getting too old for this. And I wrote a letter to Stuart detailing the program that I was working on and some things that I was doing that that were really working for me, all of which, by the way, were based on training less and less often, but training harder on the big basic compound exercises. And Stuart actually published the letter as an article in the magazine. Got a lot of feedback on it, good feedback, and he said, well, can you do another article? And I said, sure. So I started writing for Hard Gainer magazine, and all of a sudden, I was one of the people, one of the small number of people in the world who were pushing basic compound exercises, hard training, training for strength, getting away from pumping routines, getting away from bodybuilding routines. I was doing a lot of power rack training, and it started to really, really make me strong. Doing a lot of power rack and single rep training, and I started to get so strong that I actually began entering powerlifting and bench press contests. And before you knew it, over the course of a couple of years, I'd won 5 national championships in drug-free, drug-tested powerlifting competition. A ton of regional and state titles in powerlifting and bench press comps. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, I really ought to start writing about that. And so I expanded from writing articles in Hard Gainer magazine to writing for a magazine called The Iron Master, put out by Osmo Kia. Wrote some articles for Milo, Randy Strawson's journal, and wrote my own book. The book being Dinosaur Training, Lost Secrets of Strength and Development, which came out in 1996. You probably at least have seen a cover. has a cover of an old-time strongman lifting a barrel overhead. It's a blue book with white print, if you will. And it's referred to, interestingly, as the Little Blue Book, which I think is a play on the Little Blue Pill.
Right.
Which is funny because I've got a very much of a drug-free focus. But, you know, the Little Blue Book or the Bible of Strength Training just hit the world like you can't imagine. It just had a tremendous impact, just absolutely astonished me. Eric, you have one of the first numbered copies of Dinosaur Training.
Yeah, we were talking about that, Brooks. I've got number 1697, and it has obviously handwritten, you've written your name in it. Let me put it this way. Anybody that's not, has never been around that type of training or anything like that, that'll hit you blindside because you won't know what you just ran over you. That book had a lot of influence on me. I'll tell you a number of things. I love Olympic lifting. I've always liked it. One of my best friends who used to train with me was an Olympic lifter. Short guy, but man, he was a powerhouse. And he was, in fact, he lived up near this way, and he saw Alexia when he came to Schenectady here many, many years ago. Joe Peters was the chief of police over there, who was an Olympic lifter, and he coached a lot of them.
Yep.
So, I mean, that was a big thing. But that book, I always liked Doug. Of course, I love Paul Anderson. I'll tell you why, just to kind of put them together. We had spoken about this, and here's a big thing, and I know you've done it, I'm sure, too. When you train alone, this is all going to go into power rack training. You and I both know when you're handling big stuff, you better have something very, very strong to support you. And I'm not a big guy about spotters because sometimes spotters fall asleep on you when you're doing things, and that could kill you. Your book, Doug Hepburn, had a major effect on me too. I got some of his real old stuff he wrote, and all that just kind of spiraled into the point where I was never bodybuilder or nothing like that. I mean, you know, like you said, well, longer routines. Well, I tried that like everybody. What did it do to you? Usually you overtrained, you had diarrhea, that was the end of you, okay? And, you know, I'm looking at these guys. How does a guy like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, here's a guy they're saying, well, he's got 22, 23-inch arms, you know, and blah, 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 and here's his routine, and I'm looking at it like, are you kidding me? Well, after a while, you get smart anyways, and you start figuring things out. And like you said, you know, I saw Sergio Oliva in his heyday. Now, I liked Oliva because he was an Olympic lifter in Cuba, and he was huge. And I know what he was doing, all right? But when I saw this guy in person, we used to train at a club called the Steel Pier. It was pretty famous, and it was real hardcore up to probably like the last 15 years when, of course, people came in and ruined it. But I'm here to tell you, after I read Dinosaur Training, and of course you had, you know, I don't remember if I was getting it monthly or what, when you had the Dinosaur Files too, and that was an exceptional paper. I mean, there's authors in there now. I mean, I can remember early on when you had Matt Fury in there, who no one ever knew him. So for me, reading your stuff and the other gentlemen that I always admired had a major effect on me. And this is when I seemed to, I don't know if it was just the dead stop watching you or whatever, or we had started doing it a little beforehand. That's what propelled me really into the dead stop training and the rack. And the feel of, it was probably much like I was elated. I never, you know, obviously you can't have a big ego when you go into that, because I don't care what you did prior to that with a rebound, you're not going to do that the first time out, and you might not do it the first 20 times out. So there was a lot of adjustment mentally with that too. But that book you have is, you know, if I had to rate, it's definitely in the top probably two. I don't even know what I'd go over with that. There's other books that differentiate themselves with it. But I wish I could take that thing and shrink it and just keep it in my pocket all the time, because that's one of those things that no matter what, even if you're feeling a little down with the quotes you got in there, and those things are very important. So I kind of got long-winded there, but yes, dinosaur training is, like I said, it's sitting. I'm looking at it right now.
Well, the really interesting thing, you know, again, for anyone who didn't live through it and see the progression, you know, dinosaur training talks about training with sandbags. It talks about training with heavy, awkward objects, doing multiple sets of low reps, powerlifting-style training, heavy rack training, you know, training with odd objects. I think I said that, but if I'm repeating myself, it's only because it's worth repeating that heavy awkward objects. But it completely burst open this limited little world of bodybuilding training and training on exercise machines and said, you know, look, here's all this great stuff you can do. And now, you know, 20 years later, you look back, you look out and you see you have all the CrossFit gyms, you have all of the what I call the pseudo CrossFit gyms, the box style gyms, whatever they're called. You have old-fashioned hardcore training gyms. You have a lot of people doing Olympic weightlifting, which really is in a renaissance here in the United States. Powerlifting is off the charts. Strongman training, strongman competition has come out of nowhere. Stone lifting, rock lifting. You know, all these things really were not on the map, and to the degree that we had them, they were, you know, in the steel pier type gym or the basements and garages of the world. And they didn't have magazines and resources, you know, and now you've got books, you've got courses, you've got trainers, you've got coaching, you've got gyms that are Olympic lifting gyms, powerlifting gyms, strongman gyms. You've got people selling equipment for all this. There's been a tectonic shift in the world, and it's absolutely amazing, but it goes back to the efforts of a very small number of people. I mean, you could rattle them off on your fingers, a very small number of people who really stood up about 20 years ago and said, you know, enough is enough. This bodybuilding stuff, the muscle magazine stuff, the silliness has got to stop. And the reason it has to stop is that strength training is something that is so important and has so much to offer for so many people. It's such a good thing. We can't let it be boiled down into the Madison Avenue muscle mag mentality because they ruin it. And it's just changed. And, you know, people like you, you bought Dinosaur Training back in 1996 when it first came out.
Yep.
And, you know, you've been on a constant journey ever since.
Yeah, and you know what it is too, Brooks? It was like, I think that was always my mentality, but you just you needed somebody to maybe, you know, like the alphabet, you needed to know how the letters went and from A to Z, and that book hits everything. And, you know, that influenced me too in a lot of ways where, you know, we talk about equipment. Well, I've had to construct 5 pieces of equipment. My good friend's a welder, and I'm very lucky about that. I've got 5 pieces of equipment that blow the top off your head what I had to do, and it was out of necessity. It was because I didn't have a spotter. I had to make things work in a power rack, and I've got like 2 pieces that are just out of this mind. One piece just it's a dumbbell press setup where it basically anchors right to the rods. The rods go through this, and you can put any size dumbbell you want on this thing. This thing would support a tank, and I can put it at any level I want with the rods and the rack, and I can press that thing over my head and not worry about it coming down and crashing through my skull. I've got another piece that I built that it's a huge laminated, it's probably at least 4 inches, 5 inches thick. What we did is we cut steel all out of it, and it is on the bottom fastened through this laminated wood, and this is the width of the rack, and I can put it right down on the rods, and I can do any type of partial I want with my Husa steel stones to get ready for Iceland. And we did something similar to that outside where we did a big thing of 6x6s below the frost line where I can chain this right to one of my other. I've got 3 stones, 2 here, 1 up in Buffalo that I gave to a friend that helped me out, Steve Helmicki, who he writes for Milo too, and I'm sure you're probably familiar with his name. So one of the things that book did, you know, I had the wherewithal, obviously, to carry out what I had to do. But when you get ideas and you're more prone to that style of training, or you want to try it, that's like the thing that just gives you that little notch, like that little kick in the butt that says, you know what, you're tired of doing regular training. You know, I love squats, deadlifts, and pressing is the key. It's those compound movements are going to build more muscle than anything. We know that. But I wanted to get into the stones. You know, I Steve Jack, another guy, big influence on me. You know, first guy to go to Iceland. Well, you want to talk about another pioneer with this. Steve opened the whole thing up to go lift the Husafell stone. I never knew that existed. Well, I got that video from Milo, or from Iron Mine, and I was like, holy cow, man, this is, and you know, he's showing all the stuff he does and how he's very, you know, I believe now he's a pastor or something to that effect. He was a teacher before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's showing, you know, what the demonstrations of lifting stones and, you know, doing neck work with the Iron Mine harness there, you know, picking up huge boulders with that thing. Well, I was like, I'm hooked now. And, you know, it's good that you guys were out there then, because I'm not saying I would never stop training. That was like, I say to everybody, and I don't know your feeling out, but I think it's just a DNA thing with guys, girls, whatever, like us. You don't know what pushes you in that direction, but there's something there. And I've had this discussion multiple times with people. But these things were things that kind of set me ablaze. And I had trained with some great people, and they weren't sissies by any means. But you know what? They were afraid, Brooks. I had guys that were super strong that wouldn't go near any of the stuff that I was starting to do, you know, including dead stops. They didn't want to touch rocks, because I had a couple guys over here. They were big guys. You know, they couldn't get a 180-pound rock up and move with it. And these were guys that were 650-pound deadlifters and stuff, you know, big benchers and stuff like that. These guys weren't weak, and they weren't tone boys either. So, you know, in the what happened with that, all that, with most of that, there was maybe one guy, my buddy Richie, who's down in the Carolinas now, was the only guy, the Olympic lifter, that wanted to do it. And if anybody knows anything about World's Strongest Man, the Olympic lifters are always the guys that can translate over to that better than any other lifter. It's been proven. So to answer your question, sir, I would tell you that a few of you really had a mark, and that's what propelled me to where I am now. God willing, stay in good shape. We're going to be in Iceland next spring of 15. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell, as far as, you know, what these books, and, you know, I've heard you speak before, and I have materials where you speak on, and I have a lot of other materials. It's good to have guys like you, and I hope I'm now part of that thing, because I've always been that way, but I've never come out publicly like we're doing today on Motivation Muscle. And, you know, I've never written stuff like I've written on the blog and showing you YouTube stuff and all that. But, you know, I'm glad to be part of this, Brooks.
You know, you mentioned Joe Peters earlier, and
yep.
You know, there are issues of Strength and Health magazine going back, I think, to the 1930s, if not that, the early 1940s, because I know that they were pre-World War II,
yep.
And some of Bob Hoffman's early books that have photos of Joe Peters. And
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, and, you know, and so, you know, if you have training knowledge in your brain from Joe Peters, that's going back to the 1930s. He picked it up from someone who was probably older than him, so that's going to take it back into the 20s perhaps. You know, and you're moving forward and hopefully going to be pushing this forward for a long time.
Yep.
It's a continuum. It's sort of like a chain of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's a really, really interesting thing, and it's really neat, you know, for anyone who can be part of it in any way, whether you are putting information out there, you know, packaged in whatever format, mm-hmm. or whether you're doing the training, it's a really cool thing.
Well, let me tell you something interesting, just to go back to Joe Peters. I met the chief through he was a big mentor with me with his name was Bill Patton. He owned a health food store in Schenectady where Joe lived for before he moved down south. He probably owned that store for over 40 years. He was a chemist, very educated from Union College. But boy, you talk about a guy, you know, when we're talking about grass-fed, well, I love Shiloh. I don't know if Shiloh's owned by Shiloh, but that chicken, and I used to get their bread, Shiloh Farms, incredible. And he, you know, he had turned me on to this stuff 20 years ago. And, you know, I'm very glad that people are starting to take a look at what they're eating and doing all that. But, you know, I hear a lot of things and I kind of like sit back and chuckle a little bit because I was like, I guess I had met the right people at the right time because I was light years ahead of a lot of the stuff that's here today. You know, people think a Whole Foods is like, you know, we've hit God-like things. And I just like, okay, you know, whatever there with that. But getting back to Chief Peters, I met him through Bill Patton. He was Bill's best. They were very good friends. And he didn't live that far. He was in Schenectady. Now, I got very friendly with him, and I'll tell you what, he probably had to be in his 70s then. This guy had a handshake on him, I mean like a vice still, and he was the most, I guess that word, I don't know, I've heard it for years. You want to talk about a dapper guy. He'd come in, that guy usually had a shirt and tie or dress pants, always had a very nice coat with him, and he always wore a hat. And I'm telling you, this guy had skin on him like a 40-year-old. I used to look, I was like, you talk about impressive. Well, I got to be good friends with him. I started talking to him on the phone a lot and stuff. And I went down to his house a few times. And I got in my garage, my friend who does all the welding, he had one of the first, the very early York racks that, you know, they are super close. There wasn't much to them, but they were big. He had that, and he had early York equipment, and he had, I bet, every strength and health that was out there. Right. Well, he had stuff. He had big connections at General Electric, which was very big at the time in Schenectady. And he says to me, Eric, I've got some dumbbells here. They're too heavy for me. I've got a couple hundred-pound plates here. And he said, what we used to do is we'd go over to GE, they'd mill these plates with a one-inch hole, and they'd give them to us. And I was like, wow. He says, I got a pair of them if you want them. Well, we had spoken, you know, back and forth over the years, and Joe obviously has passed away. I don't even know how long. It could be 10 years now. But I have Joe's York. I have two 70-pound dumbbells, I believe they are, that Joe gave me. And I did the best thing with them. When we built the cement Husafell stones, I have Joe's 100-pounders in the one that weighs 430 pounds because we added weight to it with the cement. So I've got Joe in my arms when I go to pick him up, and I've got him his dumbbells in the garage, and they're always honored and revered. So I can tell you this guy was so interesting, and I miss all those guys. You know, they've all passed on. Granted, they are considerably older than me, but the knowledge, and they're back in a time, you know, I'd ask them about Bill March, you know, because I always, you know, I got that picture of March, like where he's standing there. Obviously, he's just got, like, I don't know what they wore, not shorts, but I won't say it's a bodybuilding thing he is on, but he's got the bad brush cut and everything, and I'm like, this is the guy, you know? And I mean, when you got introduced to power rack training, Bill March was a big piece of that whole thing with Bob Hoffman and York. Yep. So,
well, that's you know, a good segue.
Yeah.
To power rack training.
All right. Well, here we go.
So, The thing about power rack training is, of all of the things that I wrote about in Dinosaur Training, all the different ways to train, all the different tools you could use in training, all the stuff that has become very popular since then, you know, as I said, you know, sandbags, barrels, attaching chains to bars, you know, Olympic lifting, powerlifting, strength training, et cetera. Farmer's walk, what I call finishers, which is a term from an article I wrote in Milo in like 97 or 98. All of that stuff basically has mainstreamed. The one thing that has not mainstreamed, and this is fascinating, is power rack training. And, you know, I was trying to think, why might that be the case? And it may be that power rack training really doesn't lend itself to a box gym situation, doesn't lend itself to a lot of people working on the power rack for time against each other or competing, so to speak, as a lot of gym programs currently do. It definitely doesn't fit into the bodybuilding world. You do see power racks in the university and college weight rooms now, which is, you know, great, a wonderful step forward. But I think they're basically used as safety racks. They're not used as what, you know, for the real purpose, which is to start your lift, be it the squat, the deadlift, bench, press. Those are really the primary rack movements, I think. To start the movement at different positions and different angles than you would normally use. And, you know, most people use a power rack as a safety rack. But the beauty of the power rack is either doing heavy partial movements where you're overloading the tendons, overloading the ligaments, overloading the bone structure, and obviously strengthening them as a result of the overload. Or you are starting the movement at your sticking point, at exactly the place where it becomes difficult to push or pull or drive. And you overload that weak spot and you turn the weak spot into a strong spot. Or, and this is something that very, very few people do because it's an absolute ego killer when you first start. You start from the bottom. If you're doing bench press, for example, you set the pins in the power rack so that you squeeze yourself under the bar, you're in position, chest arched, shoulders back, you know, just exactly ready to drive the bench, drive the bar off, up in the bench press. And you set the bar so you have to squeeze underneath and start from a dead stop, bar on the pins, and drive that weight up from the dead stop. Extremely difficult, night and day difficult from, or night, you know, it's night and day compared to the, you know, the conventional bench press, down and up, and it's a universe away from the drop and bounce, which most people do. But, you know, I wrote about that in Dinosaur Training. It never made its way into the gyms or the boxes of the world. But I'll tell you what, there are a lot of people in garages and basements and some in their backyard because, you know, a lot of people build a power rack in the backyard and they just put a bar and plates out there and they don't care if anything gets rusty. In fact, that adds to the fun.
Yep.
But there's a lot of people training alone, doing that kind of power rack training. And I think some of the reasons why they do that, number one, it's a safety thing, obviously. If you have the bottom pin set, you're not going to get trapped under the weight. But number two, if you're training alone or if you're training with one or two trusted training partners, you don't care about the ego thing. No. Whereas people who are in a gym situation, you know, they want to bench press 400 pounds, and if they have to take the weight down to 300 or 3-something to do a bottom position bench press, they don't want to do that because they're afraid someone might look over and see them and think, you know, oh, my God, that guy's only benching 320 or whatever. You know, so you've got that going. You also have the thing that power rack training is a uniquely mentally focused type of training. And I'll share a story, and I hope I don't get in trouble. Trudy is upstairs, so hopefully she won't hear this. But
okay.
Trudy and I have been married a number of years now, but we actually have known each other for much longer than that. And when the first time we ever saw each other was at this little hole-in-the-wall gym that we both happened to go to. And she remembers seeing me getting ready to do a set of squats in the power rack. And she didn't know what they were called, but they were bottom position squats. And at that point in time, I was working on building my bottom position squat, starting, you know, with down under the bar, thighs yep. parallel for a powerlifting style squat, get under the bar and stand up with it. You know, I was working up to 500 pounds, which when I was able to do that allowed me to work up to a 605 regular style powerlifting squat in like, you know, no time at all. So there's a lot of carryover once you go back and you get the balance and the movement down for the regular squat. But anyhow, tell you what, to get under that weight and stand up with it, you're sitting there, you are just getting so focused and intense, and it's just, you know, coming out of your ears, this massive concentration, focus, intensity. It's the power rack, the bar, and that's the whole world. There is nothing else. And you are just in that little place, and it's the whole universe to you, and you're focused on that, and it is absolutely scary to other people. And if you're not used to it, if you haven't seen that, you don't know what that focus, that intensity is like, you know, you look and you think, my God, that guy's crazy. And she saw me, you know, I was breathing hard, I was getting psyched, I was probably growling because I was going to take that bar and I was just going to just
snap it,
bend it, break it. You know, it's like, And she saw me, and she remembers thinking to herself, what a Neanderthal. What a Neanderthal. And she was like, God, you know, and just like, stay away from that guy because he's crazy. And it was like, you know, 6, 8, 10 years before we ever even talked, because her first impression was like, this guy's insane.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what I think these things do too. I think when you're doing that type of training, okay, and for the first time, I've always been pretty aggressive to begin with, but I think it teaches aggression like nothing else. And I'll tell you a funny story quick. You know, it's going to go on the same line of with you and your wife. My sister used to come over a lot on Saturdays with my nephew, and my buddy Richie was here, who's, you know, down in the Carolinas now, and we were squatting in the rack that day, and by then we had probably a year under our belt, and I was starting to really nail some big stuff. Well, my driveway, just to give a description, is 95 feet up to where the garage is. It's more once you're in the garage, obviously. It's probably another 20 feet because the main power rack I use is in the back, which I love the way it's set up because I can either look right down the driveway or just stare through the wall. And this is the greatest thing, Brooks. Now, we didn't have, I don't think, any music on either. And she said when she got out of the car, now this is in front of my house. This is, you know, a few feet down from the driveway. She said, I was scared to go up the sidewalk. She said it sounded like someone was getting murdered out in the backyard. So, you know what I mean? So that's that, you know, I can relate to you with that. And not only that, I know the neighbors hear me around here. I mean, you'll like tonight I got to work out, and tonight's going to be the first night. You know, this is another thing that I wanted to tell you too. And this guy, Jeff T-Rex Bankins, who's been a regular on the show, he does all the old strongman stuff with the chains and all that. He's into the hip belt squats and all this stuff now. He's a great athlete, and he does so much good with, you know, kids and everything. Well, tonight I'm going to start bending steel in my hands. Went down and got the hot rolled stuff. got the half inch and three quarter. I mean, I was down there. I was kind of bending some of them in the rack, which I shouldn't have been doing. I mean, at the steel yard. But it's like, you know, as a lifter, and I know you'd probably do the same thing. We're always looking for other things. I'm not saying to replace, but I know, like, for me, it's like, okay, so now I can go and add maybe a little bit of stone lifting. You know, we'll get the grip, we'll make some little designs with it, and away we go. So the power rack for me, I'll tell you right now, is the most essential, I'll emphasize that, piece of equipment I've ever had in all my training history. I like doing a lot of different things. But if you told me, Eric, you're only going to be able to do one thing from now on, and you can pick the three, because I'm going to ask you this question I ask everybody, too, as we get down the road. I don't want to forget. If they said to me, you got to pick one exercise, and that's all you do in the power rack, I can say with no hesitation, dead stop squat. Period.
That's no fair, because that's one I was going to.
So, all right. So, if I ask you right now, Brooks, I know you love pressing like myself. Mm-hmm. Guys I grew up around who are a lot older at the Y all were big pressers. Yep. Not just bench pressers. These guys were not afraid to go overhead. I love deadlifting, and I've heard the argument my whole life: deadlifts better, squats better. Well, once again, we're going to talk about something you hit on with the bodybuilders. Everybody has a certain structure. Some people are more set up to deadlift. Some people are more set up to squat. That doesn't mean you can't be an explosive big deadlifter, but there's something about supporting weight to me. And then you'll hear the people, even the guys that are lifted, well, you know, you're overloading your spine, you know, you're hurting yourself and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't squat anymore because of that. Okay, well, that's your opinion. If it works for you, fine. I'm a guy to this day that still loves that load on you. And another thing I like is this. With dead stop training, if you come off the wrong way. Now, I've come off wrong with squats and presses and that and still got the thing up, mm-hmm. but it barely. And I've had it where it came down on me and almost knocked me out of my can. That's another benefit of it, because if you do things right and you don't get stupid, you can become quite a lifter. I mean, because it forces you to use form. But we'll go on to that. I want you to keep going, but I'm going to ask you right now so I don't forget. If I came to you and said, Brooks, you got three movements here, the squat, the deadlift, and we'll call bench press slash overhead, and you obviously know how to do everything in the rack, and I say to you, you only got the power rack now the rest of your life. What are you going to grab?
Are you saying one exercise?
One exercise out of three. The four, technically. What do we do here?
Bottom position squat.
There you go. So me and you are right on the same page. So proceed. Let's keep going here. It's just good stuff, man. Good stuff.
Well, you know, talking about rack training and squats. One key point about rack training is most people think of when they think of doing squats in the power rack, they think of doing quarter squats. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, and quarter squats are a good movement for overloading tendons and ligaments and bones, and, you know, assuming that there's no back problems. And, you know, for some people, there are, you know, particularly as you get older. But, I mean, you know, that's true of any exercise. But going in and loading the bar up to a super heavy weight and doing quarter squats is effective. But doing a squat where you start, say, so you have to move the bar 8 to 10 inches, mm-hmm. works the body differently, and for many people is much more effective. And even more effective than that is what I call the bottom position squat, where you set the pins so that you go down, thighs parallel, get underneath, and stand up. And similarly on the bench press, a lot of people are familiar with bench press lockout, where, you know, you can handle a huge amount of weight, bend the arms just an inch or two, lower, push back up, you know, lower, push back up. Of course, you only do that in the power rack, and you only do it with pins for safety's sake. But much, much more effective than that is starting at the sticking point, which varies from person to person. You know, for some people, it's 4 inches off the chest. For some people, it's a little bit higher. But the point is, training that position, even though you're using less weight, is much, much better than doing a bench press lockout with, you know, 5 tons. And similarly, the bottom position bench press, starting from the chest and pushing up to arm's length, is a tremendously effective movement, even if you're doing a lot less weight than you would use in that limited range top position lockout. One thing that people don't get, they think of the bench or they think of the power rack as overload training. It really may not be overload training if you're doing the sticking point from a dead stop, or if you're doing the bottom position from a dead stop. Particularly when you first begin rack training, you're not going to be able to overload and handle more weight than you can use in the full range movement. You can handle less because you're hitting the really weak areas, the bottom area and the midpoint or the sticking point, and you're hitting that sticking point. Think about this: with no momentum, the bar's right. Not moving. You have to start it from a dead stop and keep it going. That's what makes it so effective. But for example, if you're a 400-pound bench presser, you know, you might find that you can only handle 320 pounds, 340 pounds if you start from the sticking point or an inch or 2 inches below the sticking point. That doesn't mean that sticking point training in the rack is not effective. It's extremely effective. However, you're overloading without using more weight than your full range movement. And a lot of people just don't get that. You know, so that's something to think about on any power rack exercise that you're doing. Break the exercise into segments. Don't just do the top position with enormous amounts of weight. That has a benefit, but the middle position, the bottom position are where you really, really want to focus. You know, it's a little bit like something that's starting to become more and more popular, particularly with the rise of Olympic lifting in the U.S., deficit deadlifts.
Yep.
Okay. A deficit deadlift is a very effective movement, but it's not an exercise where you're going to do an insanely huge amount of weight. Don't need an insanely huge amount of weight. Whereas a top position deadlift or a deadlift from right above the knees, you're going to be handling, you know, an enormous poundage. And that has benefits too. All of these things have benefit. The great thing about the power rack is that you take an exercise, you break it into segments, you focus on the segment that you want to work. What I used to do, you know, I used to train, let's say, bottom position bench press. And I'd work that for a while. And after a couple weeks or a month, whatever, you know, I'd sort of hit a sticking point where I'd been going up in weight and I felt like I had kind of milked that exercise and gotten a lot of benefit from it. But it was time to do something else. And instead of going to a different exercise, because back then I was training for bench press competitions and powerlifting. So, you know, what am I going to move to? You know, I've got to do bench presses. So what I would do was I'd say, okay, instead of bottom position, I'm going to start from 2 inches off the chest or 4 inches off the chest,
yep.
Sometimes as high as 6 inches off, which for me was, you know, that's right around midpoint sticking point range because I've got short arms. So, and then I'd work that for a while. And then when I'd kind of, you know, milked that for a period, I'd go back down to start from the chest. And you know, I'd just work one, I'd get stronger, and then I'd go to a different position, and I'd work that. And they all would carry over from one position to another position. And, you know, gradually the whole movement became really strong. And here's something interesting, which no one believes. You know, as I said, I won 5 United States National Championships in drug-tested bench press competitions, sub-masters division, 198-pound class and 220-pound class. During that period of time, I did virtually no bench presses in training. The only time I did a bench press was in competition. All of my bench pressing was bottom position work in the power rack.
Brooks, but do you see, though, I mean, you just gave a very big, broad picture of everything, but if I might add something to it, is this. Do people realize, I mean, if you got to think about this, what you just said, you did no other benches outside of the rack until you went and competed. If that isn't testimonial to the power of a focused, concentrated individual like yourself in a power rack, is everybody out there, just listen to me. Do you realize the power this guy built? He didn't do anything out of that rack. I mean, this is what is so special and unique about this. Think about it again. He did nothing out of this rack, and the guy was a five-time champion in benching. Where are you going to get dividends like that with anything else, Brooks?
You're really not, and that's why, you know, for strength training, you know, for people who are interested in sheer raw physical strength, the power rack is just an absolute necessity. And it's really interesting. You know, you mentioned Bill March and York and so on. You know, power rack training came into the fore in the 60s. You know, and I know that, you know, you've got the whole story of the growth of anabolic steroids and so on, and Dr. Ziegler and all of that. And people tend to think, well, you know, the people who were doing power rack training in the early 60s, people who were doing isometric training, they were all using steroids, and that's what gave them an advantage, and that's what gave them the results. And so it wasn't the isometrics, and it wasn't the power rack training. Well, that's not good thinking. You know, that's throwing the baby in the bathwater out. Because, you know, when I was training, you know, I'm lifetime drug free. I don't know if I've ever seen an anabolic steroid, because I wouldn't know what an anabolic steroid looks like, but I've never used them. And everything that I was getting from the power rack was the result of the power rack. You know, I've ridden before. When I was training, there was a pair of 100-pound dumbbells in the gym, and I was always trying to clean those, sit down on a very, very high incline, you know, like roughly 80 degrees, and press them. And I, you know, I tried and tried, and I could handle 80s, I could handle 90s, I could handle 95s, I could never do those 100s. And finally I said, you know, I'm just going to focus on the bench press. So I focused on the benches in the power rack and didn't even go near the dumbbells. And after a period of time, I think it was a couple months, probably 3, 4, 5, 6 months, I tried them again. Got 5 reps.
Oh,
just smoke,
wow.
You know, boom, 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 because I built so much more shoulder and tricep strength. I mean, it was just absolutely phenomenal. I took, you know, another exercise I love to do. Learned this one from Tony DiTillo. He used to write for Perry Raiders.
One of my favorites, man. I've got 3 of his books sitting here with yours.
So you know, DiTillo, who a lot of people now know because Randy Strawson has carried his articles in Milo. And, it, you know, if you're interested in getting his books, Bill Hinburn has reprinted them. You can Google for Bill Hinburn, Anthony DiTillo, and get the books, and they're really fascinating. But what he liked to do was a high incline military press, where he's doing a seated incline press on a very, very high incline. It's basically the position you would be in if you were doing a modern day Olympic press, and do it from a dead stop, again, where the bar is at your chest and you have to drive it up and off the pins. And I started that. The first time I did it, I worked up to 220 or 225, you know, gradually worked up to 250. And I remember it took 7 workouts. I was doing this once a week. So it took 7 weeks trying and trying and trying to get that 250. And finally, you know, every time I would do it, I'd drive it up, but, you know, yep. I'd hit the sticking point and push and push and push, boom, and nothing happened. Like, okay, missed, but, you know, I'll try again next week. And next week, I, you know, drive, push, sticking point a little bit higher, but I just couldn't get it all the way up, you know. And so worked that. It gradually broke through, and I managed that 250. And after that, I just got stronger and stronger and stronger. And I ended up with a PR in that of 320 pounds.
Nice.
You know, which was, you know, a really good shoulder and tricep exercise and a really good shoulder and tricep lift. I mean, that was a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I got there was combining that movement, which I did once a week, with the power rack bottom position and 2-inch off chest, 4-inch off chest, 6-inch off chest bench press, mm-hmm, which I also did once a week. And, you know, it's just amazing the strength, the thickness, the muscular development that you can build with focused, intense, super concentrated power rack work. And you don't need a lot of training, and you don't need to do it very often. I was getting amazing results hitting each major exercise, as I said, just once a week. It was absolutely astonishing.
Well, Brooks, I'll tell you, just as an adjunct to Anthony DiTillo, just two things, and I'm sure you're familiar with them. That incline you were talking about, if it's the one, I've got a picture of him. He's got the big beard, and the thing that always impressed me the most, besides the weight that he's doing, those chains that are holding that whole bench apparatus together, they're all wrapped around there. And I don't know if that's the same thing you're referring to, but I've got a picture of that, and he is just a brute. And then obviously, you know, I bought every Ironman I could find when Bill Hinburn was really dealing, you know, when you could get him. Because when I wrote him, I said, you know, anything you got with, you know, Anthony DiTillo articles, I'd want. And I remember, you know, pictures of him like at 330 or, you know, he was only like about 5'5", I think, or 5'6".
Yeah.
I never seen a guy with an upper back. I mean, his traps, I don't know if they were even, they were like insane, the thickness. And you look at his pecs. But the most interesting thing, I don't know if you probably remember this too, you remember when he came down to about 180 and he trimmed down strictly on the power rack? That's what he used to get himself down.
Mm-hmm.
And there, once again, I mean, you know, we're talking about getting bigger, stronger. Brooks has told you all the stuff that he's done. Not everything, I'm sure, with the rack, but the examples here. Well, if you really want to and you understand how a power rack works and you do want to trim down and stay very thick and muscular, there we go again, Brooks. We got another big dividend with that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you know, one of the other things I should say is that the power rack is not a Smith machine. A lot of people think the Smith machine is a power rack, or they try to do power rack training or partial training in the Smith machine, quarter shots, mm-hmm, in the Smith machine. And absolutely wrong. Smith machine is a really poorly designed piece of equipment. It's not a natural movement. It locks you into a straight up and down vertical movement when you need combination of vertical and horizontal, you know, because your body moves in arcs, doesn't move straight up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Smith machine is, in my opinion, dangerous. There have been people who've gotten very severely injured by getting trapped under a Smith machine or slipping and having the weight come crashing down on them. And I know that there are some versions of the Smith machine that perhaps are better designed, and that won't happen. But I also know that there are people out there with spines as a result of Smith machine work. And there was one young woman within the last couple of years in South America who was training alone in the gym on a Smith machine. Something happened. She got stuck. And basically, she bent double with her head down between her knees with the weight on the back of her neck,
mm-hmm,
and asphyxiated. I mean, she died. in that machine. Yeah. And the interesting thing is, I wrote about that in my daily email tips that I send out from my website, www.brookscubic.com. I wrote about that, and I had like 10 or 12 people around the world, young guys, I think, most of them young, unsubscribe from my email tips.
Huh.
And I think the reason was they were mad that I was dissing their beloved Smith machine, you know, because they enjoyed, you know, loading up the Smith machine and doing fast bouncy partial movements and pretending that they were strong. But the Smith machine is not a power rack, and absolutely, you know, absolutely stay away from the Smith machine. You want a power rack.
Yeah.
Another thing, you were mentioning Doug Hepburn earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of stuff out there about don't do curls in the power rack, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know, I like this.
Doing curls in the power rack, you know, we got to kill him. Well, let me just throw something out. You mentioned Bill March. And Bill March was kind of the poster boy, if I can use that term.
Yeah.
You know, really the poster gorilla, if you will, because he was big and thick. He was, you know, the poster gorilla for power rack training. And I recall seeing photos of him doing power rack curls, dead stop from the midpoint, or isometric from the midpoint, or isometronic from the midpoint, with a big weight, like 200 pounds, in the power rack. And Steve Stanko, the first man in history to total 1,000 pounds in the power lifts, or, I'm sorry, in the Olympic lift.
Olympic lifting, yeah.
They had Stanko in the power rack in an ad that ran in Strength and Health forever. I remember seeing that when I was a kid. I saw Stanko's arms. I thought, my gosh, you know, I want to be that man when I grow up. And he was doing curls in the power rack. You know, so people need to understand you can segment any exercise and turn it from a pumping exercise into a power exercise in the power rack. But what Doug Hepburn used to do, and Hepburn set a world record in the curl, I think it was 235, 250, maybe 275. I mean,
it might have been 275 if I remember.
I think that's right. I mean, it was just what
it was huge.
It was huge, and it was fairly close to body weight, which is insane for a curl.
Mm-hmm.
And this was not an easy curl bar. This was a regular Olympic bar.
Olympic bar.
But the way he trained them, he would do bottom position bench presses with a homemade wooden bench that was built low to the floor. You know, obviously you're not going to do a homemade wooden bench with legs on it because it would collapse. He would do, you know, a homemade wooden bench, incredibly strong, made out of, you know, 2x4s, 4x4s, 2x8 boards, you know, very, very sturdy. And lie on that, you know, so you got 300 pounds of Hepburn lying on this wooden bench that's like, you know, just high enough off the floor that his elbows are not going to touch the floor when the bar is at his chest. And for safety's sake, he built these big wooden support boxes. And again, this is solid wood. I mean, it's not a wooden frame. It's solid wood. And he'd lay the barbell so that the plates were on the boxes. He'd get underneath, and he'd start from the bottom position and push the bar up. Bottom position bench press. And remember, he was the first man in history to bench press 500 pounds.
500 pounds,
now,
yeah.
So this stuff works. It's got a history. Well, Hepburn would use those same boxes for his curls. He'd start with the bar on the boxes and walk up to it and grab it and curl it from there. So he was starting from a dead stop.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that is if you set up to do a curl in that position, you walk in, you lock your back, you lock your hips, you flex your lats, put the elbows against the lats. It's funny, I'm actually doing this as I'm talking. You know, position the elbows, drive them in against the flexed lats, everything's tight, take the bar and curl it. And that is essentially the same as doing curls in the power rack, but you're not going to destroy the knurling on the bar by slamming it up and down against the pins. And you're not going to be doing curls in the power rack, which apparently is against the law nowadays. You are going to be doing a very effective dead stop curl. And what I used to do, this is probably one of the things that Trudy saw and thought I was a Neanderthal. I would do exactly the same thing, except we didn't have wooden boxes in the gym. So I'd commandeer two benches. Mm-hmm. And because I was a nice guy, I'd put some rubber mats on them so that I wasn't laying the plates right on the padding of the
padding,
throwing it, you know. But I would do the same thing where I position the bar exactly the right height so that I could walk up being exactly that locked, tight, flexed position, take the bar, bang, and do my curls. And I worked up to with an Eleco Easy Curl bar. I don't know if Eleco even makes them anymore, but
I think most of their stuff is Chinese now, yeah, Brooks.
But this was a really wonderful 15-kilo bar. I mean, it was just this nice, heavy, thick, well-made steel. It's probably like the only one left in the world.
Probably.
But it had this really nice deep angle and good nice tight knurling, just like an Olympic bar. And I worked up to 185 pounds in the curl for 5 reps in letter perfect strict form. Mm-hmm. And I was only weighing like, you know, 200, 205, 207, 208 pounds. So that was getting close to body weight for 5 reps. And it was the same sort of thing that Hepburn was doing. It was starting in that really strong position, taking the bar off of, in his case, boxes, in my case, the benches, and doing the curl. And it's the same sort of thing as the other prior rack work that I've been talking about. It's taking the bar from a dead stop and elevating it with nothing but muscle and mind force.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you something interesting. I've always trained, well, probably the last 10 years, always train arms in the power rack. And I'm like you, I like the thick bars. I got a 2-inch from Iron Mine and a 3-inch. And of course I got, you know, the good standard York bars and et cetera, et cetera. I read an interesting article. It was probably last year. Steve Justa, I know you're probably familiar with him. He's written for Iron Man or for Milo for a number of years. Pretty unorthodox, very strong guy. And he was talking about how you can take a barbell curl and basically turn it into a full body. And, you know, this is going to be kind of like a little bit of a cheat. But he equated it to like his grandfather. They're all farmers. And they'd have to get, like, the hay up in the silo, and they didn't have any of the electronic gadgetry we got now. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have an elevator. And they would get there with a truck, and they'd have to grab this thing and basically fire it up to the guy on top. And he just talked about how he equated a lot of that to, like, picking up and pushing up. And, you know, you're basically curling this big hay bale with whatever you're using. And, of course, then you got to dump it up on the top. And I got thinking about that, and what I'll do is obviously whether I'll come off at a certain height with the pins, dead stop, and maybe I'll have another set of rods on top if I want to do an ISO push-through hold with it, which is so beneficial. But I started doing the same thing. I would take this, and not being sloppy, but what I would do is I would take the barbell curl and make it a full body when I pulled it. So I try to get, you know, I'm one of these guys now, Brooks, that believes in getting every, I want everybody to come to the party, so to speak, with my body. Mm-hmm. So I try, without putting myself in any type of jeopardy, to bring everything in. And I'll tell you, I did this curl like that. I'd go back and forth. I'd do, like, say I'd use 100, and then I'd use with the, I don't even want to call it a cheat curl. I'll call it a full body. And I might take that and pull 130 with a 2-inch bar, all right? I'll tell you what. You want to talk about muscularity, and you know where it was really hitting? It seemed like I'd nail my upper back real hard, and I noticed it looked like my traps were even starting to grow off this. So that's just something that I've been messing around with lately too. So anything you want to do in a power rack, there's no way you can't have success. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know, it's something that once you understand the basic principles and break it down, you know, there are just an infinite number of ways that you can use it and get just absolutely tremendous benefit and use it on almost any exercise. Mm-hmm. You know, the basic principle of overloading the weak spots and making them strong spots. You know, I mean, that's the basic principle of power rack training. And once you're familiar with that, you get that, you understand that, you know, you're being creative and you're going out and you'll get just tremendous results. It's the most focused, the most concentrated, the most intense type of training that you can do, I think. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful tool. And I'm looking forward to the day that power rack training experiences the same kind of renaissance that Olympic lifting is experiencing, you know, that kettlebell training has experienced. I mean, kettlebell went from basically nothing to, you know, everyone was doing it. And if real strength-oriented, segment-oriented, train-the-weak-point-oriented power rack training ever came back into vogue and became, you know, the thing, mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, you would have an awful lot of human gorillas walking around.
Well, I've done a lot of video with them, but I'll tell you what, Brooks, I mean, we've talked off air. I'd like you to come on the show whenever you want, and maybe you and I can use this platform to, I mean, we haven't really scratched power rack training, what we can do, not even routine-wise, whatever, but you know, maybe we get to bring this to the forefront and really push this out because there isn't a lot of talk out there about it. I mean, I've heard it from you. I'm always preaching about it. Maybe we can catch fire. I don't even want to equate it to CrossFit because I'm not going to even get into that. But let's put it this way. Maybe we can blaze a trail the same way that has been promoted. How would that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay. Do you got anything else to add? Or, I mean, obviously, I want you to promote your website, anything you have material-wise, anything you've got you think coming out in the near future. But if you have anything else you want to add to today's show, be my guest. Otherwise, we're going to wind it up.
Well, the website is www.brookscubic.com. That's BROOKSKUBIK. If you can't find it that way, just Google my name, Brooks Cubic, Dinosaur Training. You'll get to the website. Send out email tips every day. Sign up for them and you know, hopefully enjoy them and get motivated and learn and benefit from them. There are tons of books. I've written over a dozen books on training and have a number of courses. You mentioned you know, you're a Doug Hepburn fan. I know a lot of other people are. I've got a very interesting course on Doug Hepburn, John Grimmick training course for the John Grimmick fans out there, a military press course, which is a huge favorite because so many people just love that stand on your feet, push the weight overhead stuff. A lot of books. I've got Dinosaur Training, the original. Another one that's really popular is Gray Hair and Black Iron, which is designed for older trainees, which I define as age 35 and up. But, you know, if you're 35, 40-ish or older and you want to train for real, but you're not sure how to do it because no one talks about serious training for the older group, this book does. Got a number of projects coming out. You know, you mentioned the Dinosaur Files newsletter. We're going to bring that back as a quarterly publication. So,
that's great.
Yeah, that's something for people to be looking at, looking forward to.
Brooks, can they get? I don't know if you have them, but can they get any of the from beginning to where you left off? I don't think I've. I think it's probably been 2 years, maybe. I could be wrong since I got because when I re-upped when you brought them back, and then they stopped. Can they get any of the old issues, or are they all out of print?
I did the Dinosaur Files as a monthly from in 97 to 2002, which was a 5-year run. Because of being really busy at work, I had to stop that. I came back and did it again for 2 years. It was like basically 2010 to 2012.
That's correct.
And, you know, then again, because of some other obligations, I stopped that, wound that down. The 2010 through 2012 run is still available. Those are hard copy. I think they're all 24 pages per issue. With photos and articles from a lot of, really interesting hardcore strength fanatics from around the world. And, you know, of course, a lot of material, original material that I wrote. Those are still available as back issues.
Okay.
And, then, as I said, we're going to come out with a quarterly, which I think is, something I'll be able to keep up with very easily. And that'll probably be 36 pages per issue. It'll be bigger than the other iterations of the Dino Files. But the other thing that I'm working on that's going to be coming out, people probably be able to pre-order in September if all goes well. That's a book on diet and nutrition. And
great.
Not a book on, the latest celebrity diet or the latest, how to lose weight diet, although obviously we're going to be talking about weight loss. But that's going to be a book about diet and nutrition for strength fanatics.
That's
great.
People
who are into this looking for lifelong strength and health. And they know that diet is a component of that, but, they're not sure if they should go paleo, if they should go vegan, if they should do nothing but eat meat, don't know if they should use milk, et cetera. I mean, there are all these questions out there, and there's so much information, and it's so contradictory and so confusing. And what I'm trying to do is say, from a strength training point of view, from a lifelong health and fitness point of view, here are some things you need to be thinking about. And that's going to be a really interesting and, I think, a really valuable book. So that's something for people to be looking forward to.
Well, Brooks, I'd be real interested in talking about that anyways, because this month near the end we're going to have our weight loss product out. It's called The Weight Is Over Fast. And I worked with a friend of mine who's been around here for a number of years, and he was 267 pounds of real unhealthy belly. I mean, big. And he had a history of diabetes and heart disease in his family and all that, and he got a little worried. So we decided, we laid out a plan. We started July 1st of 2013, and October 6th of 2013, or I'm sorry, November 6th of 2013, we had him down to 224. We had a goal of 225, and right now he's holding that 222, and we're working on a thing right now as we speak where we want to get him up to a solid 229 by Christmas, and he's staying right at 222. He dropped 2 pounds, as a matter of fact, and we're going to do this mainly on, well, he's going to do the standard weight lifting, obviously, but we're going to curtail that to fit this here, where we're doing a lot of hill running with him, but the unique thing we're going to do with him, we're going to create all that strength and size, and as we talked about before, ligament, tendon, I call a cable, when we get it to where we want, we're going to bring him up to about 227 to 228. And you and I both know if you do it right like that, this guy's going to look phenomenal, because anybody that's seen him at his present state when he was in July of last year, and they see him like, well, you can say even now, but you see a picture of him and like you start seeing a big, big change come mid-September, October. By the middle of October towards the end, most people say to me that there's no way that was the same guy. And so that's going to be coming out. We've done a super job on that, and it does go into, Dennis, what he did diet. We did very few things supplement-wise. What we did is we really got after him, and, when we talked off-air before we came on, we really changed his thinking, because he was pretty much wrecked mentally, and it was very hard in the beginning. But we stuck it through, and now it's paid dividends. And, I've said before, He worked very hard, and, you know, I give him kudos for that. But that's going to be real interesting, and obviously we're going to do some stuff with that the first of the year. And obviously, as I told you, I'm going to get ready for Iceland, and we stay nice and healthy. And I'll give you a little hint here. Everything that I'm doing weight training-wise is power rack, everything. Other than, like, when I go out, you would really like these. We built last year, we do, like, the hand-thigh deadlift. We took two 55-gallon barrels. Mm-hmm. Cut them right through the centers. They got 3.5-inch fat pipe through them. I went to Roger LaPointe, got a used 1970 Circa York barbell, Olympic bar. You can put this thing through. You can only get one plate on the outside, which is usually a 45, and what we do. You want to talk about an awkward dead stop lift, you fill the barrels with all the weight you want on each side, and it is a pisser to pull. I mean, you know, it's a top deadlift, obviously, but I liked it because it just seems like it transfers over to the stone, too. So that's another thing. But, you know, anything else you want to add? You know, I know you got that. Is there anything else you want to – I know you're on Facebook. Are you on Twitter or anything like that, social media-wise?
So far, just on Facebook.
Okay.
But the best – well, we've also got the Dinosaur Training blog, which is – part of the website.
Okay.
But the best thing for people to do is just, you know, head over to the website, www.brookscubic.com, sign up for the email tips, and, you know, just see what we have. There is an absolute ton of stuff out there and more coming. And the idea is to really make a push and really, you know, really bring out a lot of new material and try to get, you know, more hardcore lifting fans, you know, united in a continuing ongoing effort to preserve and keep alive all of the great traditions of the Iron Game, you know, all of the old school strength training methods and all of the things that so many of us have been doing, profiting from in the sense of building strength and muscle. And teaching, and, you know, keep those alive so that people can continue to go out to the garage, go to the basement, go to the gym, go wherever, grab the iron and have a great time and get great results.
Amen to that. Obviously Brooks gave his website. So if Brooks, you're set, I'm going to give a few things before we sign off.
Go for it.
First of all, this is Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Fiorello Eric. As I just was telling Brooks, we got a big DVD, MP4 digital download. The wait is over fast. That'll be coming. And Motivation Muscle now is going to be breaking off on its own, too. We're going to be doing quite a few things. Wait till you see this page we're putting together. I hope that's within the next 2 weeks. That's going to be first. We're on Stitcher and iTunes, and I'll tell Brooks, just like I tell everybody, Brooks and I will be heard all over the world once this podcast is posted. If you need to get a hold of me, obviously, it's FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.RR.com. The website is www.FiorelloBarbellCo.com. That's co.com. And I think we hit everything. Brooks, great show. We could probably do 10 shows of power rack training. So this has been an honor for me, and I can't thank you enough for coming on and giving your support to myself and, you know, the Fiorello Barbell Enterprise, as I'll call it. We like to have you on anytime you want to come on. The welcome mat is always down for you. You know, I'll talk to you off the air for a second. But if there's anything else you want to say, give it out to us, man.
Just wanted to say that I really really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. Love the work that you're doing, and keep banging the drum, man.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. So for Brooks Cubic, this is Eric Fiorello, And thanks a lot. Have a good weekend, and we will definitely this show is going to be up in the next few days, so we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.